Hello and welcome to today's edition of the Daily Friend Show. I'm Herman Pretorius, still standing in for our great colleague Nick Lorimer, who's hopefully joining us one of these days. Joining me today to unpack three hot button topics is the great and estimable Marius Ruert, contributing editor to the Daily Friend, electoral reform expert, researcher, and cricket lover. I'm just reading off his CV. So, Marius, to dive into the news for today, I think we have to start with the cabinet change of Minister Nkabane, with a story under the headline, Ramaphosa buckles under DA's demands, fires Nkabane, saves the budget. Now, perhaps a brief overview of the situation. So Minister Nkabane was the Minister of Higher Education and Training until just last night. And her dismissal followed a protracted period of controversy and mounting political pressure concerning her management of appointments to so-called SETA boards. And these SETA boards are sector education and training authorities. This issue originated in Parliament, where the DA, led by Karabo Kakao, one of their national spokes people, challenged the minister on the appointments to these SETA's committees. And the minister defended herself, saying that these appointments to these educational authorities had been independent and transparent, but it later transpired that key members of the panels that chose these authorities were in fact close associates of the minister, her allies within the ANC, including her chief of staff and an ANC Youth League leader. This led to the DA's claim that she had misled Parliament, filing criminal charges against her for lying to Parliament and covering up these fraudulent appointments, and of course formed a key part of the ultimatum that DA leader and Minister for Agriculture John Steenhuisen issued to President Ramaphosa only a few weeks ago, saying that if the president did not take action against corruption implicated ministers like Minister Nkabane, the DA will withdraw from something big. It wasn't said will withdraw, but the expectation was that the DA would withdraw from the Government of National Unity. In the end, the DA withdrew from the national dialogue, and apparently that triggered President Ramaphosa quite intensely, him being very invested in this thing. But at the time, it seemed like the ultimatum was faced down by President Ramaphosa. And yet now, mere hours before the final passage of the appropriation bill, the final part of the budget process that has been such a political football, President Ramaphosa fires President Nkabane and, as the headline says, saves the budget. My sources from within the DA indicate that they will now support the budget. And I think that's quite right. It would look quite petty if they sort of get the sculpt, get a concession, and then sort of still sink the budget because they didn't quite get their way. The politics of it doesn't quite work in the perception of the public. But all that being said, Marius, do you think this is a significant moment, both in terms of perhaps the political dynamics of the GNU, but also perhaps the policy within the ANC? What changes or what pressures do you think we should read from this decision by President Ramaphosa?
I think we're starting to see that the ANC is maybe very reluctantly starting to accept that it's in a coalition government. It's because it's been since the election last year, it's still been pretty much acting as if it's got 60 or 70% of the vote. And we could see how it reneged on its deal with the DA to pass the budget originally going back to March, whenever it was, and then tried to get support from Action SA and BOSA and all these other kinds of parties. And I think the DA's you know, it's all easy, also well and good for us to say the DA must pull out the GNU and all this kind of stuff. But I think where they have made stands for the right issues, I think they was right to make a stand on the budget initially. And I think this was also the right place to make a stand. And they finally actually got sort of a concession out the ANC. Like, obviously, on a lot of things, the ANC has been, you know, very intransigent. They've been, you know, not willing to make any kinds of compromises, which happens in a coalition government. I think the DA has been the one who's been making all the compromises. The ANC has made any. But I think this is finally showing that the DA does actually have some leverage in the GNU. You know, we can talk about Butsimane Mela. There's been, I've also heard he's perhaps not, he doesn't have the cleanest hands in the government. But I mean, it was actually ridiculous to keep the Minister of Higher Education on if you're going to fire somebody like Andrew Whitfield. You could say that the reason for firing Andrew Whitfield was right. He was he ignored the president's instructions allegedly. But what happened? Other ministers have done far worse things and accused of far you know, actual crimes, and they've been fired. But I think this is finally showing the DA does have some leverage in the GNU, and I think overall the GNU has probably worked maybe better than we would have expected, actually. But I do, yeah, as I say, I think this is finally the DA has shown it does have some leverage in this government and needs to use it.
And I think what's important about the GNU is to not judge the GNU by some sort of perfect reforming government. That was never on the cards. We know the ANC. We know the ANC of Cyril Ramaphosa, a cautious man. If he has any claim to capacity and skill, it is that he is a cautious guy. He doesn't like upsetting forces within the ANC that might tear it apart. So, given the givens, it was always going to be the case that a GNU government would not be a DA government. It would not be a DA IFP government. So within that strictures and within the sort of the comparison of seeing, you know, what's the alternatives, either an ANC only government, an ANC EFF MK government, or this government, or perhaps a DA-less GNU. On the whole, I think this GNU, even if it is just the fact that the budget actually needed to respond to democratic pressures where it never had to in the past, that voters could see, I voted for that party and that party taxes or not. I think that was a very, very useful moment. And also this, an unprecedented firing of a minister for, an ANC minister, pardon me, an ANC minister for alleged wrongdoing. Is this guy going to fall down in terms of just raining gold and leprechauns everywhere? No, but that, if that had been the expectation that all will be fine and dandy now, then you're going to be disappointed. But the fact that there's, for the first time, something that might look like accountability, even if it's the nanoest of millimeters in the right direction, it's an indicative that that direction might never have been explored absent the GNU. And that's coming from someone who really was anti the establishment of the GNU. And had also, up to relatively quite recently, been fervent in the, you know, the sooner the DA gets out of the GNU, the better. And as a DA person said to me earlier today, politics isn't an exact science. And I think the DA can claim the win. It saves the budget. It showed Ramaphosa blinked. Do you think on Ramaphosa's position, this changes his situation in terms of, is he now looking stronger or weaker? Because he has this paradox of being at the same time the most popular politician in the country, but also a majority of South Africans would approve of a motion of no confidence in him. How does he come out of this, do you think?
I think probably to ordinary South Africans, he probably comes out looking not bad. But I think probably in the NEC and amongst the radicals, it's going to be seen as kind of pandering to the whites, you know, and to the DA and to white monopoly capital and what have you. And I mean, it's all actually quite bonkers that, you know, a few years ago, what the Minister of Higher Education did would probably have set on the fast track for promotion in the ANC. But this has changed things. And but also, I think it does show that the ANC knows that they got to keep the DA in the GNU just for, not everyone in the ANC, but I think quite a few people know that for reasons of stability and so on, they need to keep the party, keep the DA in the GNU. There was an article over the weekend that said the ANC was considering a couple of options. One was keeping the DA in, another one was kicking them out and bringing in BOSA and Action SA and a couple of other smaller parties. But then it would be a very unstable government. Another option was doing a confidence and supply agreement with the EFF, where the EFF wouldn't get any executive post, but would maybe get a speaker or deputy speaker. But apparently even the ANC is very reluctant to work with the EFF because they're such a chaotic party and, you know, not very trustworthy. And the final option was to have a minority government where the ANC would simply just try pass legislation on a case-by-case basis. But I think they know to actually have stability in the government, they do need to have the GNU as it stands with the ANC and the DA, whatever it is, 60% of the seats in Parliament, just over. So it's a pretty stable government, and for things like electing a president and passing a budget, that's what you need. And I think the ANC knows without the DA, it would be very difficult to have budgets and so on passed. They'd have to have all kinds of negotiations and would be completely chaotic.
And I think two things specifically recommend a deal with the DA. Number one, President Ramaphosa is not known for being sort of nimble on his feet, being quick to respond to moving circumstances. He's either very cautious or he takes his time or is indecisive, but he's also sometimes quite clumsy, politically clumsy in terms of what saying there are no farm murders in South Africa or speaking to someone on a township campaign event, complaining to him about the security of tenure of her mother's RDP house. He said, you know, get a lawyer. So he's not a nimble individual with sort of great political nous. So to have the stability of the DA, where he doesn't have to constantly respond to changing dynamics and the threat of his majority in Parliament, I think that recommends a deal with the DA. And secondly, also just if the government wants to keep its relatively sound-ish fiscal reputation, ensure that the state can continue borrowing, that our bond situation doesn't blow up, there needs to be a credible government. And the DA is the shortest route for the ANC to keep that sort of component of operational governance, even if it is just borrowing money to be able to spend it. I mean, that's the ANC needs it to that end. Moving on to our second story. And this is also about one of the GNU partners, at least party-wise, but it is the deputy president of the Patriotic Alliance, being the subject of the story with the headline, Police Find Kene Kunene at Home of DJ Somebody's Alleged Murder Mastermind During Arrest. Now, this is, I think, a storyline that would have been rejected by most publishers or editors of political thrillers. What, you mean the police just showed up to arrest another murderer and there was a politician? That would never happen. Well, welcome to South Africa and Johannesburg. So a brief bio of Kene Kunene, a guy who served time behind bars for fraud and Ponzi scheme-related stuff, eating sushi off a model, not, you know, strictly illegal, but certainly impactful in sort of in terms of crafting his public reputation. And now MMC in Johannesburg, for, I think, roads and infrastructure, something along those lines. And now being associated with this alleged link with the underworld of Katiso Molefe, someone arrested for the murder of DJ Somebody. And Gaden McKenzie is quite often quite firm on the fact that he is a reformed gangster and prisoner, that he moved on from that. And if people remember, over the last decade or two, McKenzie really built his reputation as a motivational speaker, as an author, on this idea that he moved on from his criminal days, his irresponsible youth. Quite some moving stories there. But should we then be surprised, Marius, that you've got a party leader with time behind bars, a deputy party leader, time behind bars? Should we be surprised by something that looks like a link to the underworld? And once we are either surprised or not, Do you think this is good for trust in politics, or would you believe his innocent explanation that he was just there facilitating a journalistic interview?
Look, I do think when somebody's done their time, we should give them a second chance. But then you obviously aren't too surprised when somebody like Kenny Cunanu, who has been, engaged in some fairly, not great stuff, that he is connected with these kinds of people. It also makes you think about all these things that come out from General Mkhwanazi, and that there's organized crime has really deep links into the South African state and the South African judiciary and so on. And this doesn't make you think that it's anything different. Even if that it was all above board and so on, and it was all pretty innocent, and Kenny Cunanu was just meeting him for a normal meeting. You also have to think, surely a guy's got to, somebody like Cunanu's got to think about what it looks like if he's meeting somebody like this in public or is at their home. It's surely just doesn't come across looking that good. So it definitely makes you ask questions about the South African state and the involvement of organized crime in South African government and in Joburg, where Kenny Cunanu is an MMC and so on. So while I think we do need to give people the benefit of the doubt, given Cunanu's history and so on, and what we do know about how organized crime has infiltrated the state, it does make you raise your eyebrows and wonder about what is actually going on behind the scenes there.
And there's sort of a sad consequence that I saw from spending a few months in politics 2 years ago, that in a way voters, especially PA voters, aren't put off from voting PA for knowing that Gert McKenzie and Kenny Kunene have a criminal history. And as you say, that in and of itself shouldn't be a disqualifying factor. I mean, rehabilitation is one of the reasons why we have a criminal justice system and not just the death penalty for everything, because as a society, we do believe that rehabilitation is possible and noble and achievable. But what is sort of concerning is that you get these drip feeds of something resembling gangster politics, and still voters are so frustrated by the failures of years and years and years that they are willing to go, I don't really care about the gangster politics component of it. I just want someone to govern and do the basics right. So it is sort of it's a sad reflection that voters are willing to say, frankly, at the end of the day, let's make a Trumpian bargain. We're not electing someone who we will look to for integrity or morality or with being without blemish. If the taps could run, if the lights could work, we'll take it. So in a way, the political cynicism that's baked in there is sort of sad. But let's move on to our final story. And this is one that you brought to our attention, and I thought it particularly sort of moving in a way, but charming in another way. Oldest living Springbok dies at 96. Now, I just want to make clear to listeners that that isn't an actual antelope. We're not talking about something in the Kruger National Park fauna or flora. This is very much someone who played for South Africa in the green and gold. Marius, what can you tell us?
So I think just it's interesting story just for a couple of reasons. So the guy was called Des van Jaarsveld, and he was born in then Rhodesia. He captained the Springboks once in 1960, which was also the only game he played for them. It was interesting that his surname was van Jaarsveld, but he couldn't speak Afrikaans. And van Jaarsveld at the time, he also thought he'd actually been blocked from playing more for the Springboks because he wasn't an Afrikaner. And he joked at the time when he was picked as captain that it'll be the first time ever that a Springbok captain will be giving his team talk in English. But I just thought what was quite funny was the Transvaal newspaper, which was kind of a mouthpiece for the National Party at the time, said when van Jaarsveld was picked as captain, it is an evil day for South African rugby when the country has to seek its rugby captain from beyond its borders in the territory of a strange land. So I just think I just think it shows you how far we've come as a country. Imagine what the Transvaaler would have said about somebody like Siya Kolisi, captain of the Springboks. I think they would have been, I mean, the world would probably have fallen off its axis, whatever the case is. So I think just shows you that how people got so upset about a guy with an Afrikaans surname who just didn't speak the right language and was from the wrong country. Upset people got. Now, you know, just shows you how far we've actually come as a the Springboks themselves and as a country, I think. And I think it's quite a juxtaposition to show that.
No, that I think that is fair. And it sort of shows a deep humanity at the end of the day, that I wonder how many fans of rugby at the time of Van Jaarsveld's captaincy, you know, 80-minute captaincy, thought, we can win, but I don't care if we win or lose, but I don't care. I care whether Soti is the captain or not. And I think the moderate middle that we see in our polling that really just wants our sports teams to be good teams, my suspicion is that moderate middle sentiment goes back a long way. And it's perhaps it's fitting that we pay tribute to this man and to the strange land he represented, and that strange land perhaps not being Rhodesia, but being South Africa, because my word, we are a strange bunch. That is all for today in the Daily Friend Show. We will see you again tomorrow to break down the good, the bad, the ugly, and perhaps even the slightly moving and random in looking at what South Africa offers us as we fight the battle of our ideas. Thank you, Marius. Thank you to the listener, to the audience. We'll see you again. God bless.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.